Welcome to Nature Calls, conversations from the Hudson Valley. Our team's goal is to present science-based information about gardening and all things nature in New York's Hudson Valley. Host Gene and Tim, along with team members Teresa and Linda, are master gardener volunteers for New York's Columbia and Greene counties. So if you're interested in gardening or nature or nuggets of information about what's happening outside your door, settle in. Enjoy the conversation. Whatever the season, we have something to say.
Hi, I'm Jean Thomas.
And I'm Annie Skabinski. Welcome to Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. Today, we're talking to Bonnie Warwick. Bonnie comes to us from the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association, as well as the Elmendorf's Hand Spinners Guild, which is based in Red Hook. She's lived there all her life and still lives there. Bonnie is the Guild's resident expert on using natural dyes to color natural fabrics, and is a local legend with her witchly brews. Welcome, Bonnie.
Yes, welcome, Bonnie. We're glad to have you here. I have a question before we get into the real questions. Elmendorf Hand Spinners Guild. Tell me about that, and where did the name Elmendorf come from?
The Elmendorf Inn in Red Hook, New York, which Red Hook restored, and quite a few groups meet there back about 30 years ago. I had a few friends that belonged to the Red Hook Town Board, and they decided they wanted to start a spinning guild. And I joined, and it became the Elmendorf Spinning Guild, and now we have about 45 members.
Well, that's pretty impressive. Well, tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Let's see. I grew up in Red Hook. My dad had a farm stand selling honey, eggs, and vegetables and canned goods. We raised bees. My dad used to take me hunting when I was younger, and I didn't hunt, but he showed me different plants that they used to pick, like ginger root and things, for the restaurants, for spices, and taught me a lot about plants. After that, I finished high school, went to Panama, worked with the Indians in Panama, learning basketry and things, and dyeing, and then I went on to become a nurse.
You don't get bored easily.
No.
Okay, tell us more about the fiber and handcrafts and how I can understand getting interested in fibers and handcrafts, and I understand you're being interested in plants from a very young age. How did the two get together?
Well, after the Elmendorf started, we started delving more into sheep and different sheep breeds and having groups. And I just learned from other people, the elders in the group, and just went on from there and got into regular dyeing and then natural dyeing.
Start a little earlier. Take me back. Grandma taught you to knit, you told me once.
Yes. She taught me to knit when I was about 5, which was tricky because I'm natural left-handed, and there was no left-handed books at the time. So I pretty much taught myself. Every year I try to learn a new craft, be it crochet, weaving, hooking, always up to new things. I learned about dyeing, but in the early years, I learned about using synthetic dyes like RIT and things like that. And the major problems with those is they're not natural dyes, and they don't hold up over time. They fade out to nothing. So I decided I wanted to try more natural dyes and got interested in that.
So you started to get interested in natural dyes. I heard you went to school with several Native Americans who helped foster that interest.
Yes, I met them in about 11th grade, and they were with us for a short time, but I learned a lot from their parents and grandparents, and it really got me into it even more. I learned how to make salves and things like that, too. So then I started to conduct experiments that involved like various metals, different types of waters, and different plants to see what colors I could come up with, because it was just exciting because you never know what you're going to get.
Okay, I got one of my side trails. You were in Panama.
Yeah.
Did you learn anything there about dyes?
They mostly use dyes as like inks on baskets and things like that. Okay. So I did learn some of the plants from there to learn how to make inks more than dyeing on fabric at that point.
Whoa, that's cool. Okay, now I'm interested in the most famous color of all.
Purple.
Mm-hmm. Which do tell us about purple.
Purple is very hard to get unless you over-dye to get that color. But there is purple in mussels, which of course we can't get around here. Orkel, they call orkel purple. But I've tried logwood bark, and that stays for a while, but I'm still hunting for the purple I can get in nature without having to over-dye to get the color.
That stays?
Yep.
Okay.
It's a lifelong thing.
So do you have a little experiment room in the back of your house where you have
No, I live in a mobile home, but I do work out on my porch with a couple of camp stoves, and I do a lot at the Dutchess County Fair. And a few of my sheep and wool grower friends have barns and things, and we set up stuff outside.
Okay, so...
So go to the fairgrounds for a minute and tell us what goes on up there.
Well, the Dutchess sheep and wool growers have a barn where they show their animals, and we have a wool workroom, which we take in things for judging, fleeces and garments. And we have the natural dye kitchen where I show people how to dye with plants on wool. We use the dyes, we cook them there, we cook them up, and we have the garden outside, which I have like about 80 dye plants in right now. And we have samples of everything in the garden inside the room so people can see what colors we get.
So when can we visit the wool room and see this in action?
During the Dutchess County Fair, the third week in August.
And do you have classes at other times of year, or do you have to, like, join the guilds?
Well, usually through the guild we do classes, and the Dutchess County Wool Growers, they'll put out a thing for classes that people can come. We try to do something like in September where people can come and do outside, or I just do one-on-one just with people to play around.
We'll put some links to the Dutchess County Fairground and the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers Association, as well as the Elmendorf, so people can get more information to any of those places you've spoken about.
Okay, now we talked briefly about plants, which we will get back to. But now I'm looking at a list of other raw materials that I want to run by. Peach bark, crabapple bark, mushrooms, mint leaves. Well, you can't escape them anywhere. Bedstraw roots. What color?
Bedstraw roots will give you a coral color.
Okay, because the roots are like that color, right? And lichens. I love lichens. Okay, and seeds and even insects.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think we want to get back to plants.
I wanted to jump back to experiments for a minute. You said you were doing experiments and that a lot of the natural dyes were tough to achieve. So talk a little bit about the chemistry.
Well, natural dyes, a lot of it, 10 people could use the same materials and come out with 10 different shades of the same color or a totally different color. It depends upon the water. Is it hard water, soft water? Is it distilled water or rainwater? Then you come into the mordants. You can mordant your fiber, which means to coat it with a chemical that makes the dye adhere to the yarn, which we use alum, we use copper, we use tin, we use everything. I have a jar of pieces of copper pipe that with ammonia in, and I just soak that and I just dip a little of that in there and change the color, alkaline or acid.
Well, if you're good on the alkaline and acid, we have some soil samples in the office that need to be tested, too.
And I have another little question. I do the third grade questions. Okay, you've got a piece of fabric in front of you, and you want to duplicate a color.
Not easy to do. I write down everything I do, and I keep samples, but it can come out totally different even a year later. It has to be exactly the same amount, weigh everything out. You can get pretty close.
Oh, that could be problems,
it's
huh?
Usually a one-shot deal with a color.
That's why frequently if you buy hand-dyed yarn, they'll tell you what lot it was dyed in. And when you pick out several skeins, you want to pick out all the same lot. Because if you go back a week later and it's a different lot, you're going to have a patch on your sweater that doesn't match.
Time for flowies. My granddaughter calls them flowies. Well, she doesn't anymore. She's 14. You have a dying garden, which is a really terrible name, by the way.
Yeah.
Let's go look at my dying garden. Oh, goody. Okay. You said how many plants?
Oh, they have about 80 different plants in there right now, and I change it up a little bit. I'm currently down there cleaning it out right now and working on putting some more in.
Right. Is it set up kind of like a formal garden, or is it just like random, or is it in alphabetical order? Or
no,
what?
I have each thing has its own little bed, you know, so it's not really random, but I want people to be able to see what each plant is, and I put signs in so they can tell.
Oh, so there's a goldenrod bed and a perilla bed.
Yep.
Okay, that makes some sense. Well, to me, not much does. Now, you talked about perilla, and there were, Lazy Susans?
Black-eyed Susans.
Okay. Zinnias?
Yep.
What's weld?
Weld is an Egyptian plant that they use to make bright yellows with, and they often used indigo over top of it to make green.
Oh.
Because it's hard to get green in nature, too, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. So how do you get weld? You get seeds for it?
Well, you get the seeds, and you save a few plants every year to get more seeds, and we just make a new bed. Because I have to move it every year at the fairgrounds because it eats up the nutrients in the soil, so we have to move it.
Move the whole garden, you mean?
We move all the beds around, pretty much.
Oh, so you're rotating them?
Yep.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about something you're growing that's pretty exotic for our hardiness zone. I didn't even know about the Egyptian weld when I thought this other item was exotic. Tell us about cotton, Bonnie.
About 20 years ago, somebody told me that you cannot grow cotton in New York State, and I said, watch this. So a friend of mine named Nan Crawford from Virginia and I got together, and we both grew cotton together, and I started in February in my house, in a little greenhouse. In May, I moved, when it's warm enough, I moved the cotton out to my planter bed, and I keep an eye on it. I feed it heavily, fertilizer during the summer, and it grows to about 3 feet tall here, and I get maybe 100 bowls, which is enough to make about a skein of yarn a year. But my friend Nan grows, hers get about 7 feet tall, and she's picking bowls up to November because it's warm there. So we kind of put it together, and she grows it for me, and I spin it for her.
Do you different varieties? You're looking for one that's going to have a shorter season.
I do green, Earline green cotton, and I do what they call a slave brown cotton, which is from hundreds of years ago. The seeds have just continued on.
Okay.
And white, I don't have too good a luck with here, but my friend Nan grows white. And I usually weave it into dish towels or knit washcloths and things like that.
So the bowls themselves are the different colors?
Yes. The cotton is brown, green, and white you can get.
Whoa, who knew?
Cotton.
Okay, so then you don't need to color. Or do you color colors?
You can. I'm learning that now. Okay. It's a whole different process to have the natural dyes adhere to cotton. So I'm piqued my interest now to work with that.
So probably different mordants are needed?
Yes. Yep. And you have to put it in cold instead of heat, and it has to sit for a while. It's a big, long process.
So it's a big old chemistry project.
Yep.
And you're doing it in pots and pans on your porch.
Yeah.
Which is probably how they did it back in the day, mm-hmm. when that was the only option there was anyway.
And I have a good friend named Margie, and she collects all the wild things on her property for me because I don't have land. Like, she brings goldenrod, she brings me bedstraw, she brings me amaranth.
So you talked about having help in the dying garden. Who works that with you?
My friend Margie Hedges, and she's the vendor coordinator at the Sheep and Wool Show in Rhinebeck, and she belongs to the Dutchess County Sheep and Wool Growers, and she is the head of the wool room, the wool work room. She comes and helps me, and my husband Ed comes down and waters it, fertilizes it, and helps pick the weeds.
Good man. Okay, we're kind of interested, but I'm not allowed to play around open fire, so I'm not going to be doing any of this. What if someone listening wants to learn about this? They could sit in on one of your classes, but how do you start from scratch?
Well, there's a lot of stuff on the internet, on Pinterest. There's a lot of books. You can start with just jars, glass jars, and you can put avocado pits, things from home, cabbage, a lot of, you know, just start it up and put them out in the sun. Put a little vinegar in the jars, and away you go. You got color. Put some yarn in there or cloth, and you can start that way without heat.
Okay. Is there a little more formal way than just putting jars of stuff out in the yard?
Well, the formal way would be to get yourself a little camp stove or whatever and go outside. It's better to die outside and just set yourself up. There's plenty around. You can get some goldenrod or whatever and put it in the pot. And
is there a good, I hate to say the word, text or?
There's a lot of books. There's a lot of books out there on natural dyeing.
None that you particularly recommend?
Well, I like Rita Buchanan's books. She has a few of them. They're old-fashioned. They're older books, but they're very good for the beginner.
Okay.
To learn. She lives in Connecticut.
Oh, okay, so it's northeastern plants, which makes a whole lot of sense.
One's called A Dyer's Garden, and the other one's A Weaver's Garden.
Okay, now those sound pretty interesting.
Yep.
So Tim's not here with us, one of our regular co-hosts, but he likes to ask people what makes them hopeful. So in his absence, what makes you hopeful, Bonnie, about dyeing and crafting?
It makes me hopeful that more people will go back to this craft and learn some of the older crafts like spinning, weaving, soap making, things that are lost arts. And because homesteading's good, and I believe it's good to learn, just to know it.
Okay, well, my little brain's overfilled now with all this science stuff and plant things and things. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I won't say you make me want to die, but it's been interesting.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bonnie.
Yep.
That concludes another episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. We would like to thank Sandra Linnell and Devin Connolly from Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties for production support. And a special thank you to our listeners for joining us on this episode of Nature Calls, Conversations from the Hudson Valley. You can find links to any of the topics mentioned in this episode at our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org. Comments and suggestions for future topics may be directed to us at columbiagreenmgb@cornell.edu or on the CCE Master Gardener Volunteers of Columbia and Greene Counties Facebook page. For more information about Cornell Cooperative Extension of Columbia and Greene Counties, visit our website at ccecolumbiagreen.org or visit us in Hudson or in Acre. Cornell Cooperative Extension provides equal programming and employment opportunities.